Welcome once again to our program, our 32nd unit in reinterpreting the Bible through the ages. Our guest again is Ron Eldredge, who teaches Bible and history at John Paul II Catholic High. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus at St. Patrick Catholic Church, where the shamrock intersects the streets. Ron, we've been talking about the modernist crisis in the Catholic Church in Scripture that had profound influence in the Church from many of these lay or secular Bible professors and writers through the centuries. And we were discussing Ernest Renan, who was a Catholic, of course, but who got into this same idea of search for the historical Jesus as opposed to the Christ of faith. And that's sort of the focus on which this series is. Is there a difference between the Christ of faith and historical Jesus? And of course, Pope Benedict XVI has told us that they're the same person. But if we could say a little bit more about Ernest Renan and how he contributed in the late 19th and the 20th century to the modernist Catholic biblical scholars, Father Alfred Loisy and Father George Terrell. So could we say a little bit more about those two Catholic priests who had such a profound influence on the modernist biblical scholars, Catholic biblical scholars?
Up until this point, the search for the historical Jesus was mainly a Protestant affair through the 19th century. Renan seems to be the first prominent Catholic scholar to seriously consider the subject. And Father Alfred Loisy, he had attended Renan's lectures and was no doubt greatly influenced by his ideas about biblical scholarship. However, Catholic modernism was not technically a part of the search for the historical Jesus movement, so I won't say too much about it in this series. We will deal with this subject in much more detail in a series that deals with the history of Catholic theology in general, but I'll begin by saying a few words about modernism before going into the principal protagonist in the story of Catholic modernism, and that would be, of course, Father Alfred Loisy and Father George Terrell. James Aiken, prominent convert to the faith and a leading apologist, tells us in an article entitled just simply Modernism that, quote, "The heresy of modernism was inspired by tendencies in liberalism, Protestantism, and secular philosophy," end of quote. He says that, quoting again, it was influenced by 19th century studies by Kant and Hegel, by liberal Protestant theologians and biblical critics such as Schleiermacher and von Harnack, by the evolutionary theories of Darwin, and by certain liberal political movements in Europe. The centers of modernism was in France, England, Italy, and Germany, end of quote. Now, we talked about in some length about 3 half-hour sessions, if I recall right, Immanuel Kant and his philosophy, and I think about one or half a session on George Hegel. And we also talked about Schleiermacher, and we will say a few words about von Harnack in the next series, not in this series. But whatever. Modernists such as Loisy and Terrell wanted to make Catholic scripture scholarship and theology more objective and scientific.
And that was okay.
Now, there's nothing wrong with that technically in itself, but there were a few Catholic scripture scholars and theologians trying to do just that at the time. I said there were a few of them. Where the modernists went wrong was their belief that people who live in the modern world would not believe in miraculous stories told or the supernatural claims made in the Bible, Old or New Testament. These men believed that in order to make the Bible believable to modern people, the stories related there had to be reinterpreted in a naturalistic or mythological manner. And we spent some time looking at how these liberal Protestant scripture scholars in the early to mid, through much of the 19th century, had just done that. explained away the miracles and the prophecies, the fulfilled prophecies in naturalistic or
give an example, friends, like you gave before, reinterpreting the miracle of five loaves and fishes.
Well, several of the liberal theologians, scripture scholars, would just simply say that Jesus really didn't multiply the loaves and fishes literally. They give a naturalistic explanation. He did this by appealing to people's charity and opening up their knapsacks and sharing their lunches with one another. So that's really how he multiplied the loaves and fishes.
Because they wanted to get away from any kind of supernatural explanation.
And Strauss, we spent a lot of time about Friedrich David Strauss, where he explains things away as in a mythological sense as opposed to the more naturalistic sense. The modernist movement gets its name from the idea that the Bible and theology has to be modernized or brought up to date in order to appeal to people exposed to a scientific and technological culture. Moreover, the modernists believe that Catholic theology should be blended with modern philosophies, and some of them are not compatible with Catholicism.
Okay, so this is a tremendous influence coming that the church has to face and answer. What about, what are some other major influences on the modernists, particularly these two Catholic modernists that we're discussing, Loisy and Terrell?
Well, there were other influences. Shaw, for example, we've quoted Shaw several times. Shaw relates that beginning in the late 18th century and continuing through the 19th, that the, and I'm quoting him here, the epistemological revolution launched by Descartes and Kant, and we talked quite a bit about both of those men in earlier sessions, Descartes and Kant, merged with developments in archaeology, history, and biblical study to produce a radical shift in the thinking of some theologians, end of quote. And then I would add to that, the emergence of comparative religion was also a major contributor to the thinking of some modernists. Shaw states that, quote, among other things, the historical value of the Gospels in the first five books of the Old Testament, otherwise called the Pentateuch, or five books, came under attack. While in his influential book, The Christian Faith, Friedrich Schleiermacher, whom we spent a good, at least two sessions on, who lived from 1768 to 1834, he sought a foothold for belief in the notion that the essence of religion is piety and piety is feeling. This is to say that to be genuinely religious, it is sufficient to feel dependent upon God. He's the one, end of quote, he's the one that influenced or placed much influence on a religion of the heart, the importance of emotions and feelings and intuition and experience in religion, as opposed to the more intellectual side of dealing with.
And that's a great emphasis today.
Yes.
How do I feel about this?
Oh, yes.
Which is not bad to detract from experience, but it can't be, it's certainly not the essence of revelation.
You got to start out with the intellect first and then move to the other. Another major influence on the modernist was the theory of evolution. And Shaw writes that, quote, in 1859, Charles Darwin's The Origin of the Species erupted on an already shaky religious scene, spewing the ideological equivalent of lava and ashes far and wide. T.H. Huxley, an aggressive publicist for Darwinism, was soon exalting that one of the best things about it was its complete and irreconcilable antagonism to that vigorous and consistent enemy of the highest intellectual, moral, and social life of mankind, the Catholic Church, end of quote. And I might add that it was Huxley who coined the word agnosticism to describe those who doubt the existence of God.
So it's a powerful statement by Huxley that the great enemy of anything that is true and intellectual is really the Catholic Church.
Yes.
Wow, that's really powerful.
As we have indicated in earlier sessions of this series, Protestantism was the first to suffer from this confluence of developments. And Shaw tells us that, quote, attempts to salvage something from the collapse of faith ranged from biblical fundamentalism to liberal Protestantism, end of quote. And we've already seen how the Jesus of history and the Christ of faith became a favorite slogan of liberal Protestants like Reichel and Schleiermacher. Shaw says of this slogan, quote, "A catchy expression is shorthand for a supposedly unbridgeable split between the human Jesus, a historical figure said to have been concealed from sight by the early Christian community's practice of shrouding him in pious fictions, and a divine being upon whom believers project their subjective religious impulses," end of quote.
So this is one of the reasons Pope Benedict XVI has written that book, Jesus of Nazareth, to answer that very question, that the Jesus of history and the Christ of faith are the same person.
And he spends quite a bit of time and space in that book on that very subject.
Wonderful. So that's easily available any place.
Oh, yes.
How about, Ron, were these developments, weren't they beginning to influence Catholic theologians and biblical scholars by the end of the 19th century?
Yes, they were. Although the infiltration of these ideas into Catholic circles was fairly slow. Shaw says that by the end of the 19th century, men like the French historian Louis Duchesne, the Italian novelist Antonio Fogazzario, the French philosopher Maurice Blondel, and what he calls the pietistic German-British intellectual gadfly, Baron Friedrich von Hugel, they were leading the way as far as, you know, Catholic modernism was concerned. And as Shaw points out, not all of these men were full-fledged modernists. And some of them, like Blondel, for example, later were, in his own words, genuinely horrified at being thought at odds with the church. Nevertheless, Shaw says that, quote, "They exchanged ideas, encouraged one another in their work, and formed a network that over time came to have an influence beyond its numbers in seminary and clerical circles." So, in fact, so much so that several Italian pastoral letters warning against modernism by name appeared in 1905 and 1906.
And that's what they called it, modernism at the time?
I believe it was Pius X that first coined the expression, if I recall right, in an encyclical which followed the year after 1907, called Apascendi, Dominici Gregis. And but I'm almost sure that's the case.
Okay.
And two of the most influential modernists of the time were, as you suggested, Father Alfred Loisy and Father George Tyrrell.
Can you, let me depart just a moment here, Ron. Can you say a word to remind our listening audience who Shaw is that we're quoting quite a bit?
Russell Shaw is one of the editors of Crisis Magazine, which is one of the new, fairly new Catholic magazines that's really outstanding and very orthodox. And he also at one time used to work for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. So he is a noted expert in the field of Catholic Catholic subjects.
Subjects in history.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, since I broke in on you, let's go on with Alfred Loisy, who was one of the main leaders of the Catholic modernist biblical discussions.
Alfred Firmin Loisy was a French Catholic priest who lived from 1857 to 1940. After having been ordained in 1879, he became a theologian and a noted professor of Hebrew. He was to become the intellectual standard bearer for the modernization of biblical scholarship in the Catholic Church. And I mean by modern scholarship the type found in Germany that had that we have discussed in this series in some detail. But he was very familiar with these German scholars. He was one of the first Catholic scholars to criticize the traditional views of the biblical creation myth and was a strong advocate of the higher biblical criticism being applied to interpreting scriptures, almost exclusively practiced by Protestants up until his time. Naturally, he explained away the stories of miracles and fulfilled prophecies found in the Bible in naturalistic or mythological terms and considered the Jesus of history to be different than the Christ of faith described in the Bible. In fact, he believed that very little found in the Bible was literally true. If I recall right, one time he said that the only thing that he thought was true in the Bible, at least with any degree of certainty, was that Jesus suffered under Pontius Pilate. Oh, that was the only thing in the Nicene Creed that he could find that there was any supposedly any historical proof.
Oh, my.
Among other things, he denied that Jesus established the church and that he is God. And, of course, holding these ideas got him into a lot of trouble with the church, with church authorities. Consequently, some of his books were placed on the index of forbidden books. And because he refused to recant his heresies, he was excommunicated in 1908, dying unrepentant in 1940. And we'll consider his life and ideas in much more detail in another series on Catholic theology. But
so as many, he started out okay, wanting to update the church's understanding of the scriptures, make them consonant with some of the discoveries being made. And then he gets into these final drifting of that Jesus didn't set up a church, Jesus wasn't God, there was nothing, all these are the miracles and the fulfilled prophecies really aren't miracles at all, and they're not fulfilled prophecies at all. That belonged to the Christ of faith.
Yes.
Okay.
Loisy's best known work is The Gospel in the Church, which he published in 1902, and it was a response to the German historian Adolf von Harnack, who I won't say any more about right now, but we'll leave that for another series, who, as Russell Shaw said, I do have his exact title, he was director for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and
He was the communications director?
Yes.
Okay.
And he tells us in an article entitled Under the Ban, Modernism, Then and Now, that the, quote, liberal Protestant understanding of Scripture reduced Christianity to a handful of basic principles. But although he wrote to refute von Harnack, Loisy simultaneously denied that Christ meant to establish a church or teach a body of lasting religious truth and argued instead for the incessant evolution of doctrine, end of quote. As I said, we'll come back and say quite a bit about Loisy in a little bit different context in another series.
That's interesting. Just yesterday I was talking to a fine young man who said that he really didn't believe from reading the scriptures that Jesus established some kind of visible authoritative teaching church. So these seeds planted have been blossoming all along, and they're still very common in our time.
Well, of course, you know, the church has its proof texts, they call them, you know, that would say that Jesus did establish the church. But again, it's not a definitive kind of historical kind of researched type of answer. And this is what Loisy and these modernists were trying to do. They were trying to use this historical critical method, a method that historians had developed, secular historians, to try to ascertain the truth of ancient and, you know, things that had happened many centuries ago. And it doesn't lend itself too well to biblical research for various reasons, because the Bible wasn't intended to be in a history book. The Bible wasn't intended by its writers to be a biography, at least the New Testament of Jesus as such, although it does contain a lot of historical facts.
And of course, that whole text that's often quoted about Matthew 16:18, yeah. Jesus said to Peter, "You are a rock, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." So there are some very clear texts in the scriptures that would indicate what the church has always maintained, that there is a visible organization that has the fingerprints of Jesus on it, being the Catholic Church.
And of course, as I'm sure you well know, Protestants will give that a different twist.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, well, let's go on then with the second great person who had such an influence in the Catholic biblical modernist approach was Father, again a priest, George Tyrrell. What can you tell us about him?
As with Loisy, we will consider him in a lot more detail in another series, but for now, I'll say if Loisy tended to emphasize the scientific aspects of theology and biblical scholarship, Tyrrell stressed the spiritual aspects. George Tyrrell, he lived from 1861 to 1909. He was born in Dublin, Ireland, and brought up as an Anglican. And he converted to Roman Catholicism in 1879, and he joined the Jesuits in 1880. And he was ordained a priest in 1891. Elick Vidler, in his The Modernist Movement in the Roman Church, has said the Catholic Church appealed to Tyrrell at first because of the mysteriousness of the liturgy. Tyrrell was kind of a sort of a mystic.
Okay.
And he had a tendency, as you're going to see here as we go along, to play down the intellectual at the expense of the experiential, the intuitive, the emotional, you know, feelings, that type of thing in religion.
He was stressing this over the intellectual approach.
Yes.
Okay.
He taught for a while at Stonyhurst, a Jesuit college in Lancashire, England, and intellectually, Tyrrell was influenced by Maurice Blondel, said to be a philosopher with modernist leanings, a French philosopher, Baron Friedrich Pugnugel, an Austrian nobleman who lived most of his life in England and was a leading go-between among modernists, and other modernists, all of whom proposed departing from the scholastic forms of theology dominant till that time so as to allow for more historical development in the interpretation of both scripture and doctrinal theology. One scholar has written, quote, Tyrrell and the other modernists sought to explain Christian faith in light of the understanding of human historicity that had arisen by the end of the 19th century. In other words, that historical critical method that was used in other fields other than biblical study.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're going to do is treat the Bible just like any other historical source. They were convinced that a static, unhistorical, universalist explanation of Christian teaching, such as prevailed among scholastic theologians at the time, rendered it incredible to modern intellectuals, for whom both change in nature and historical development in human culture had become standard assumptions. Books by Tyrrell, namely Religion as a Factor in Life, he published that in 1902, and The Church in the Future, he published that in 1903, argued for this position with some elegance, one scholar has said. Russell Shaw says that in his posthumously published Christianity at the Crossroads, Tyrrell expressed his hope that Christianity would not be the last stage of humanity's religious quest for an intermediate stage on the way to a new universal religion. In other words, Tyrrell thought that if the Catholic Church continued the way it was going, holding on to these ideas of the miracles and the fulfilled prophecies and the supernatural in the Bible, that modern people were just simply not going to accept that. And so that religion was going to die. And the only way you're going to give new life to Christianity, he thought that's what he was doing, you see, people like him and Loisy and other modernists, that they were going to give new life to Christianity. And by, you know, playing down all those things and playing up other things that we'll be looking at. James Hitchcock, a professor of history at Jesuit St. Louis University, says that, quote, Tyrrell particularly disliked scholastic theology, especially the work of St. Thomas Aquinas, who had been proclaimed by Pope Leo XIII in 1881 to be the Church's preeminent theologian. He states that, quote, to Tyrrell, scholasticism was a dead and deadening system from a bygone age which had no relevance to the modern world, end of quote. Tyrrell, like Loisy and most modernists, placed religious experience at the heart of the faith. Just you might recall how Schleiermacher and Reichel and those people had done that we spent three or four sessions on, but those Protestants back in the Protestant scripture scholars back in the early to mid 19th century. And the church itself having been a collective experience, which was then translated into dogma.
Okay, now, that's a little tough statement, Ron. What do you mean by the church itself was a collective experience translated into dogma?
Well, I mean that the idea of experience, or feelings, or intuition, in religious matters was the heart of modernist thought, as it was with many of the 19th century German liberal Protestant scripture scholars and theologians that we spent, quite a bit of time on, such as Reichel and Schleiermacher and Strauss and others. According to John Young, an Australian philosopher, catechist, and apologist, the biggest issue between modernist and traditionalist was and is the role that experience plays in religion. In fact, it has been implicit in our discussions during this whole series. Experience has been the most important idea in religion since Descartes and Kant. And Young says that the French philosopher Jean Moreau maintained that modernism is a crisis of the experience of the heart against the head. And what he means by this is scholasticism was a theology of the intellect, which played down the importance of history and the role of experience or emotion in religious life, whereas modernism emphasized the importance of history and experience or emotion in religious life. And we've seen how theologians such as Schleiermacher played down the importance of the need for an organized church with sacraments for a religion of the heart or experience. Theologians were forbidden to consider the role of experience in religious life when modernism was condemned by Pope Pius X in his encyclical Pascendi Dominici Gregis. And I believe it was 1907.
Okay, so Pope Pius X really was the encyclical that confronted modernism head on.
Yes.
And
we'll look at that in some detail when we get to the next series, but I don't want to get into that too much right now.
Okay, so we're talking about modernism being a crisis of the experience of the heart against the head, according to Jean Moreau.
Yes.
And that's why scholastic theology and the new modern approach to the Bible were on a head-on collision.
Yes.
And we'd say we really need both.
You really need both, yes. St. Thomas, of course, very heavily emphasized that.
Okay, we have about a minute and a half, Ron.
Well, I want to say one more thing before we end. Afterwards, experience received very little attention by theologians until it was rehabilitated at the Second Vatican Council. And as I said a while ago, we'll have to wait till the next series to really get into that subject in any detail.
Okay, so we're concluding another series on the Jesus of history and the Christ of faith, and how it got into the whole interpretation of the modern Catholics, Father Loisy and Father Tyrell. Sorry, our time has run out on us. So I'd like to say to our listening audience, may God bless you all, always, and in all ways.